All right. So if you folks are all here, then we're still gonna wait for a bunch of people online, I guess. So yes, you can see what I normally, your faces usually show up over there. That's why I try to remember to look at the camera, but I was looking at your TV instead.
Yeah, we had two of tea here yesterday, so.
I see. Oh, you see, you saw this, okay. Yeah. How many people came for the QFT in person then?
Us three and Jaime and Anna. So,
okay. Yeah. I see.
We have a schedule,
but
people haven't really been following it.
I didn't know that.
I see. I'm still waiting a few minutes because there should be, five more people roughly who are watching the lecture, but there's, according to the screen, so the person with the camera on is me, person with the camera off is Josh and one other person. So there's, three or four people who probably want to watch who aren't here yet, is what I'm guessing. So that's why I've been ending up starting around 5 minutes after, but no, it's hard to know. But anyway, it's starting to take 2 minutes or something.
Topology.
Well, hopefully, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Which will end up going through Thursday, I guess.
Topology and band structure?
Yes.
Is that the problems if you've seen a time room or is there the stuff
that's never left them off? I think there's one in every room.
Right.
Yes, the first time I visited here, I was. But they're trying to be very Canadian. I think that's the point.
Ice hockey. It's hockey. It's just hockey. No, hockey's not.
Ah, okay. So other people are coming. Yes, as I thought. So you shall. Let's see. Maybe there's online as you shall. This could be. Hi. Welcome.
Can you just keep it open?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but let's leave it open. I don't think anybody would be bothered.
Can we go to ask again?
It's fine. The main reason the homework has a deadline is so you do it event like at some point, like so you don't put it off for like many, many more weeks, and also so the TA can get all his grading done like within a finite amount of time. That's the reason why there's a deadline. So like if it's today, yesterday, whatever, like it doesn't matter much. Okay, so I guess now, more of you are here. Maybe people will join online, maybe they won't, who knows, but might as well get started. Okay, so as a reminder, what we were talking about last time was the transport with the semi-classical picture, where we're considering basically wave packets and they're evolving. Under these equations. So basically, classical equations of motion, except that the energy is unspecified rather than being p squared over 2m. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to use these equations to derive formulas for conductivity as a function of band structure. But before I do that, I want to just sort of talk about what are the general principles that we can get about the motion of electrons based on these equations. So let's consider a 1D band structure. It looks something like this. And I'm going to suppose that all of my k states here are filled. OK, so then the question is, what is going to happen to the electron over time? So this is at t equals 0. And then at t bigger than 0, this is my k-space picture. What is k going to look like according to these equations? I'm supposing that I'm applying electric field, let's say, in this direction. E is some ex hat. So this is this direction in real space. So I'll put this direction in quotes. So this is k-space. But suppose something like this. So I applied electric field in real space. Then according to this equation, all my k points are going to change with a linear velocity from this electric field. So as t advances, it's going to happen to something like this. So instead of being filled from here to here, I'm going to fill from here to here. And this is going to keep going. And then I'll fill from here to here. And we'll keep going. And eventually, we'll go back to the original filling. So I think this should strike you as strange. Because now if I look at what is the total momentum of electrons in the system, then in this case, it's 0, because states on this side have negative momentum, and states on this side have positive momentum, which we showed in a problem set, a couple weeks ago. OK, but in this case, now the momentum is going to be bigger than 0. Here it's going to be much bigger than 0, because every single electron in the system has a positive momentum. And then here, eventually, it's going to go back to 0 again. So if we plot the, let's say, speed of the electrons versus time, which is, say, average speed, it's going to do something like this. So the conclusion of this would be that I apply, a constant electric field, and I get out an alternating current. Then my electrons first move this way, and then after some amount of time, they move back. So this is obviously has nothing to do with what we observe in real life. If I apply a constant electric field to a piece of metal, I get a current that goes in a constant direction. The current doesn't alternate as I apply a constant electric field. Okay, so this is clearly wrong. So the question is, what have I missed? That's the question.
I was just wondering if we hadn't plotted E of K between minus pi and pi, would we have come to a different conclusion?
If E of K was constant, then we'd get a zero response.
Between
0 and 2 pi. No, it wouldn't be any different because, I mean, the actual physical state would be the same. Like, in that case, it would look like this, but your initial state is filled here, right? Okay, I think I know the answer to your question. Right. The answer to your question is, do you remember that in the problem set we showed that the physical momentum is basically this dE dK, right? So even if I plot my dispersion so that it looks like this, then if these pieces are filled, then still this piece right here has a positive momentum, this piece has negative momentum. And if I follow through the same time steps I did here, then even though the K now looks like here is kind of, it looks like it, what I'm doing is I'm saying the momentum is proportional to K, but that's not really true. I'm actually just using the momentum as this dE dK, and it just happens to be the case that the positive slope corresponds to positive K.
And just the first equation.
Yeah. So the physical picture is exactly the same. Okay, so we missed something. And the answer is scattering. So these equations that I wrote down, they work when like everything is smooth, everything is continuous, the system is perfect, basically. But so suppose we have some defects in the system. And then my electrons can scatter off these defects. Then when that happens, the momentum k dot is reset back to zero. So let's see, and then so this is one effect. And then two is there's a tendency to go back to equilibrium. K dot. Yes.
Physically,
so sorry, yeah, you're right. It's okay, what I really want to say is that the average K is set to zero. Like that, yeah, it'll get some momentum in some direction, but on average, that Q would be zero. Yeah, you're right. So it shouldn't be dK, it couldn't be K dot. It should be more like K, but it's average K. Yeah, that's right. The other thing is there's also a tendency to move back to equilibrium. So one way of saying this is that scattering should tend to create an equilibrium distribution. Okay, so then what does this mean for our picture that we drew above? So basically the way things are going to look is that we have some filled states at t equals zero. And then when I apply my electric field, indeed it's going to do some shift like this. So I'm a little bit off from my equilibrium position. But then the tendency is going to be to move things back towards zero, and you're going to end up with some steady state. Where you balance the pressure to increase k and the pressure to move back towards zero from this scattering. So a network can get something like that. And then the total current is going to come from the difference in occupation on the areas with k bigger than zero and k less than zero near the Fermi surface. So this is a very like rough picture. This is just to get the right conceptual idea of what's going on. Yes.
Kind of superconductor, is it going to oscillate perfectly like that, or is it scattering? So for there,
Or is this model
not
useful? This model is not going to be used when talking about superconductor. I think semi-classical, the word classical and superconductor don't go together very well. So actually, I don't remember the exact numbers, but you can try to estimate like how clean the material would have to be in order to actually see this effect of getting an AC current from a constant electric field. And I think the typical number of defects in like a normal like everyday piece of metal or something is too large by like eight or nine orders of magnitude. So it's basically, I think it would be basically impossible to observe it, but I mean, I don't know. People do observe effects at that size, so I'm not sure. Maybe it's possible, but I'm not sure if it actually has been observed or not. Okay, so this is my rough picture. Now we're going to try to get a more quantitative picture. Through computing the electrical conductivity. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to write down what the current should be, and then I'm going to try to see how it depends on electric field. So we're going to write down the current and then see the field dependence. Okay, so very generally, the current is going to be equal to the electron charge times the average velocity of electrons and then I guess so this is yeah, so that's what I'm going to say right the way you're saying it. So, yes, we some piece like density. Okay, so I'm going to write this. I'll just write density unspecified for now. We'll get to what I mean by this. Okay, that's so. You have to be a little bit careful because the definition of current, whether it's defined, it's not like a per volume quantity. It's a like a depends on the dimension and stuff, how you define this density. But what we're going to end up doing is looking at this in momentum space. So this density is going to be something in momentum space. Okay, so actually let's try to do that. So write this in momentum space.
What is the problem with the interpretation of density and volume coil? Because the idea is when you put a V there, if you consider a block, the V dt will give a length. And then because J is current per unit area.
That's right. So Yeah, okay, that's fine. So yeah, we can do that for now. It doesn't really matter for the derivation. We can call it another V. That's fine. Okay, so in momentum space, this is going to look like minus E integral. Okay, I'm going to suppose we're doing three dimensions. We can consider the other cases, but they're basically the same.
So you see two or three dimensions?
In three dimensions. Okay, so this is going to be our first guess of what this could look like. So I integrate over all momentum space. This tells me whether there's actually an electron at that point in momentum space or not. Then this is the speed of those electrons, and this is their charge. So here I haven't included the vector of v, so if we're going to be consistent, we can also put in the one over v. Okay. Now, there's a problem with this because there's no dependence here on the electric field.
There is no?
We could say the electric field comes in as V, I suppose, right? But, okay, hold on. Oh, something there. So, okay, what I mean by that V, so this is, so if you were to say that this V depends on electric field, what you mean by that is the average V depends on E. That's what you mean, right? Like, in other words, when I did, and I'd use this picture where all of these states are filled because I have the electric field applied, on average, the V is positive, right? But that's not, this is not the average V. This is V of K. So this is V at some particular point K, and that has no dependence on electric field. That's an underlying feature of the band structure. So this average V would be the integral times this g of k, it tells me whether the state is filled or not, right? And this could be bigger than zero if g of k looks like that. Does that make sense? I think you're correctly getting at the fact there's a problem with what I wrote. What I wrote there is not correct. But it's not because V depends on E. So the fact that I wrote V of K, what I mean is this V is just, it's like, this is defined to be the thing from our semi-classical equations of motion, 1 over h bar to E dk. Or more generally, actually, I guess in three dimensions, really it should be 1 over h bar gradient of k, or gradient of e.
So we're saying the electric field, rather, instead of changing the velocity, it rather changes the occupancy.
Yes. So I guess the counterintuitive picture, but this is like, if you think about classical Hamiltonian equations of motion, like the way the electric field acts in the classical Hamiltonian formulation, it only acts on K, and then the position changes because position depends on K. Like the electric field only appears in the equation for K dot, and then doesn't appear in the equation for X dot, but K appears in the equation for X dot, right? Like so these equations that, okay, I erased them, but the semi-classical equations are that we wrote down here are actually the same as the ones you get for classical Hamiltonian dynamics. Like, I agree that it's not the way that it's not the way you're first trained to think about it, of course. It's like, so it's still unintuitive to me, but that's...
The G of K is a distribution.
G of K is some distribution, that's right. So in fact, this G of K is really the key thing that we've missed, that this F of E and K is not correct. That's not what we want. What we want to put is G of K there. So this is my average V. And what I'm saying is that my current is actually just minus E times the average V. I guess if this is average V, I should do it like 1 over N or something. But so OK, this is proportional. But so. Key is going to be defined the correct distribution function.
The Fermi type distribution is not the occupancy. That's what you're saying, that this GK is different from F of EK.
That's right.
And I always thought that the Fermi type distribution gives us whether a state is occupied or not.
But that's only at equilibrium. And here we're out of equilibrium because we applied the electric field.
Okay.
Exactly. So that's why this is what I wrote down there is the naive picture. That's what you would think is the right answer. But it's not the right answer because we're not in equilibrium. Okay, so then how do we find this G of K? So in general, this is very hard. But we're going to make some, we've been making lots of approximations, we're going to make more approximations. So we're going to assume that one, the average time between scattering events is tau. Which could depend on E and K. So we're not going to make any assumption whether it depends on E and K or not. But if there's some constant tau, some function. And then we're also going to assume that, so we're in a steady state. Which means that the time derivative of G of K is going to be zero. And then three, that after scattering, the distribution becomes the equilibrium distribution, that is the Fermi-Dirac distribution. Okay, so now we're going to picture that I'm going to look at some little box in space here. And I want to find what is this G, which is going to depend not just on K, but also on R, the position in space. And then I'm going to assume that we also have a distribution over here at G of K, R plus tau times V. So we picture that an electron traveled here. So like our distribution here is made up of electrons that came from other places, right? So then this G of K R, I'm going to make even more drastic approximations than what I said above, actually, because the full version, which you can derive from this, is even more complicated, but gives the same answer. So this is going to be the distribution of electrons here is going to be the same as what the distribution was where they came from at the last scattering, because there they just move and they don't change anything except for their value of R. Okay, so this is equal, okay, let me put it this way. G of K R T is equal to G of K R plus tau dot V comma T plus tau. So at a time t, this distribution of k and r is equal to the distribution of electrons that arrived at this point from somewhere else, which was the equilibrium distribution because we assume they scattered at this time. So they scattered time t ago, tau ago, they scattered, then they moved here. So actually this is going to be the Fermi Dirac distribution of E of k and r plus tau dot v.
What time scales roughly would tau be? Like, how quickly does it relax to that?
Okay, do I remember what the time scale is? I think it's typically, it's you know, tiny fractions of a second, but I don't know. I think it may be like around 10 to the minus 8 seconds or something like that, but I don't remember actually.
Is that a really big assumption to make through, or I guess it's, if it gives the right answer, it will.
Well, okay, so it gives the right answer in some sense, like, but it gives a reasonable answer that experimentally works pretty well for like certain types of materials like metals. So does it give the right answer? No, not really. But does it gives like, so, okay, this is one of the, this is part of why we've been doing lots of like band theory and other things, which are very nice and clean. And we didn't make any approximations whatsoever, basically, other than the original setup of the problem. Like personally, I like that kind of problem. So like, but this, now what we're doing is we're trying to use that to make some predictions about real life, and real life is messy. And you need to make all sorts of bad approximations and hope that they're good enough. This is one of the lessons of condensed matter, unfortunately. Okay, so now let's write out what this distribution function looks like then. So we have 1 over 1 plus e to the beta e minus mu, except this energy is going to be e of k plus the electric field dot into R, where this R is tau times V. So I've done, so because this is just with the electric charge, so I guess it should be minus. So this is the electric potential energy that came from the electric field. Right? That's right. Yeah, so this is going here. Okay, so now we're going to assume that, again, then I'm going to assume the electric field is small. Something I haven't said is the definition of conductivity, this J equals sigma times E, is not expected to actually work in the limit where electric field becomes large. Only when the electric field is small should you expect, based on like a sort of Taylor expansion kind of argument, that your the first order response will be linear. So we can assume then that this E is small if we're trying to find conductivity. So as a result, we're going to Taylor expand. So yeah, just get the answer and not drag it on the board. Where to write this down? Somewhere. It'd be nice if I had better notes. Okay, anyway. Okay, so we can basically just write this as something like that. I forgot the electric charge again. Okay. Okay, there we go. Good. So this now is my correct distribution function g of k. So I end up with the first piece, which is actually the same as what I conjectured before. But now I have a second piece, which comes from this. Okay. So this piece, it's going to be zero, assuming there's no current in equilibrium. And then this piece is proportional to E as we wanted. Also, I realized that I have made a slight mistake, which is that I left out a factor of 2 in both of these, which is for spin. So you can add that. Not that it's very important. OK, so looking at these things, what we learn is that sigma is equal to, I think I messed up the signs somewhere. Could be a minus, an extra minus sign somewhere. But. Okay, I'm gonna write down the correct answer. I messed up the signs somewhere along the way. So I'm not sure where exactly. This is my conductivity tensor. So note that I've written this as V of k with a transpose, because I'm viewing that V of k is like a column vector, and then V of k transpose is a row vector. So as a result, you get this overall two-dimensional matrix. And then I'm doing it this way, because now if I put electric field as a vector here, then indeed I get the dot product that I want.
The 2 was from the table?
No, sorry, the 2 was because I forgot to include spin.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So that's just because every k point actually has 2 different states. Okay, so any other questions? Is that a question?
No.
You're just asking. Okay, put your hand like a little bit. Okay, never mind. Okay, so now I want to point out one other thing that we can do here, which is not obvious but very useful. So we can simplify this a little bit. If we look at V of k times this df dE, this V of k is actually 1 over h bar dE dk, or I guess through the gradient. Therefore, this whole piece is equal to the gradient of k of f of e of k. So after that, we can write this integrand, or we write the whole thing as something like integral d cubed k of dropping various constants, dE dk, times, well, this is not dE dk, this is gradient again. Gradient of E times gradient of F. And then if we integrate by parts, we got the integral of, the ij component is something like this. So I haven't followed through all of the constants that you get there, but yeah, I kind of ran out of space. Let me try to the conclusion over here. So sigma is proportional to the integral over k of sigma ij is proportional to del squared e of k, del ki, del kj, times the Fermi Dirac distribution. So we're going to explore some consequences of this in the tutorial later today.
What happens to the other term when we do integration by parts?
That's going to be zero. Because as you go to, so it's going to be zero because the integral of any real valued function on a periodic domain, the integral of the derivative of a real valued function on a periodic domain is zero. But let me actually write this down instead of
something in the boundary.
So the other term will look something like the gradient of E times F of E, evaluated from like K alpha equals 0 to 2 pi, for example, right? This is like one of the terms for one of the three gradient or one of the three derivatives. Let's see. Right. So there's three components here, but let's look at, for example, the component, the alpha component. So that one is definitely going to be zero. Hold on, I've confused myself. Let me think about this for a second.
Did you just say that there's no boundary to the periodic? So there's nothing to integrate over?
Yes, thank you. That's correct. This is zero because the value is the function. These are both periodic functions, so the value is the same at the values. Okay. Yeah. There you go. Good. I knew that I was. It's obvious, but then my brain is not working. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So the other thing we want to do is we want to similarly define thermal conductivity. And this response is the energy current or heat current is equal to this kappa, thermal conductivity, times the temperature gradient. So this energy current looks basically the same as what we had before, except that now this is equal to 2, again for spin, times the integral over k. Times v of k times g of k, except that now every electron, this is an energy current, so every electron also carries its energy, e minus mu. And now we also need to find this g of k, just like we did before. So we use the same kind of logic. So g of k, so g of k and r is equal to g of k and r plus tau v, just like before. But now, f of k r plus tau v. But now what's happening is f, there's no longer any electric field that shows up in the energy. But this is going to be 1 plus e to the beta of r, because now we have a temperature gradient, so my temperature depends on r. Of e minus mu. Okay, so this beta of r is going to be 1 over k t plus tau v dot gradient t. So the result of this, right. Okay, well, my notes are terrible, so this is just going to be f of e plus del t dot tau v times df dt. And this df dt equals minus e minus mu over t df dt. Okay. Probably would have been faster just to do the derivative in real time, but whatever. Okay, so now we're going to plug this back into our equation for the current, the same as we did before. So that tells me that JQ is equal to 2 over T integral D cubed K over 2 pi cubed times tau V of K transpose E minus mu squared times minus df to e dot gradient of t. I missed the minus signs again somehow. Okay, pretend that that's there. As a result, kappa is just this whole thing, which is 2 over t integral over d cubed k over 2 pi cubed tau v of k the transpose of K, E minus mu squared, minus DFD. So if you compare with the electrical conductivity, you see they're basically the same. The only difference really is this factor of E minus mu squared. Yes.
Mu is independent of K, right?
Mu is independent of K, that's correct.
Picture.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so things depend on K. So this E depends on K. This tau in principle could depend on E or on E of K or just directly on K. Both are possible. And then of course this also depends on K. But mu does not. Yes.
Actually, there is a question then for sigma that we found. When we created by parts, do we not have to worry about the tau term being caught in a derivative or something?
That's true.
Or is that just like a higher order or whatever?
Basically, yeah. So. I actually don't know all the different versions of tau that people use in practice, but the most common use of tau, the most common thing today is that tau depends on only on E and not directly on K. So in that case, I guess that would still cause a problem. Yeah, so okay, well, maybe we could say that this is true if tau is independent of E. If it actually depends on E, that's a good question. I am not sure of the answer to that question.
Can one think of this somehow in terms of, like, I was going to say, like, moments or something, pointed off this way, but. I mean, it's a function of K, but not necessarily been here. So, but more stuff. So.
Yes, I'm not sure what you mean by moments exactly, but
there's, you know, integrating over a probability distribution.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so in practice, a lot of things work out nicely that shouldn't. Sort of for the reason you're saying, that it's because this function, dfde, is actually close to zero across most values of k. So actually, this again, we'll see this in the tutorial. Actually, there's some problems about this in the tutorial. It's kind of the same thing we did for the specific heat, or we will do in the specific heat in the tutorial, but I mentioned briefly in yesterday's class. Okay, so maybe just in the end, I guess I didn't get to any topology. That's fine. We'll do it on Thursday. But well, yeah, we did start a little bit late. That's, I mean, it's more because I don't really have any idea how long things are going to take, so I'm just guessing. Before I finish, so I want to, yeah, comment on the thing I was just saying, that this function is sharply peaked. So what this df de looks like is, here's E, here is mu, and it looks something like this. And mu basically tells us what is the level up to which things are filled. Because if things are below mu, they're mostly not filled. If they're above mu, they're mostly empty. Or mostly below mu is mostly filled, above mu is mostly empty. Okay, so what does this mean in terms of my, if I think about some band structure? So let's suppose I have something situation like this that we got in our 1D chain with two sites per unit cell. Right, this is my E of K. And let's suppose that mu is here. In that case, my formula for electrical conductivity is going to say that there probably is some electrical conductivity because there's contributions from this point and from this point where this function is large. On the other hand, if we imagine we have a full filled band, and my level of my mu is somewhere here, like this, then then this DFDE is approximately zero on all bands, which might implies the conductivity is going to be zero. So this is, in short, the condition for something to be an insulator. Now, I realized also that I totally forgot to say something, which is that this formula that I've been talking about all applies to a single band. And in principle, if you have multiple bands, you should compute this formula for each band and then sum them. I just completely forgot to say that. OK, so maybe I'll leave it here for today. We'll look at this again in the tutorial. I'm sorry, today's class was today and yesterday a bit of a mess because, well, we got a little bit closer to the real world, so I think got a bit messy. We'll be back to being a bit more neat, hopefully, next time.
Before this class, it just seems completely hopeless to try and describe any real material at all in my mind. So
okay, so we're making progress.
Okay. Even just conceptually, okay, so it actually is possible in principle. It's not just a magic number. It's someone just
yeah, that's right. There's you can write down some theories, but yes. So I will also mention like along these lines though that. The way that I derived this distribution function with the Taylor expanding in the electric field or in the temperature gradient so this is like a very oversimplified way of even dealing with the approximations that I wrote down. So what you really should do is actually do an integral over the positions where the last collision took place instead of just assuming the collisions all took place at a distance v times tau. You have some like Poisson distribution over the amount of time it took for the between the last collision, and you can do like an extra two or three blackboards worth of work, and then you get the same answer. So I think part of what that tells you is that although we made some big approximations, the answers are somewhat robust. Like if you use these formulas, like just exactly these formulas with the simple band structures that we've been writing down, and you try to estimate sigma for a metal, you'll get the right answer within an order of magnitude, more or less. Yeah, okay. So anyway, tutorials later.